I would now like to give the floor to Ms. Sagarika Chatterjee of F&C Management, who will provide the investor perspective on Teep. It's over to you, Sagarika.
Great, thanks. Thank you very much for your introduction, Pavan, to what the Teep report is about. So I'd like to give an investor perspective on the report, the economic of ecosystem services. Can we have the next slide, please? So just briefly, a little bit about F&C. We're a European asset management company with just over 100 billion sterling in assets under management. Many of you on the call will be familiar with F&C's responsible engagement service. F&C's had a dedicated program on engagement with business on biodiversity going back over 8 years now. So that's why we've been following this topic with a lot of interest. Next slide, please. Okay, so I'd like to touch a little bit on what are the challenges for investors today in valuing nature. If natural resources do matter to business, why do companies and investors find this topic so difficult? Well, one of the most important reasons, I think, is that protection of natural resources would seem to clash with immediate business goals. So take the example of a global consumer goods company like Unilever. Sourcing a high volume of agricultural commodities is essential to their everyday operations. Putting the brakes on conversion of land from forests to plantations seems to clash with this immediate business objective. So it takes far-sightedness for a company like Unilever to decide that sustainability in the supply chain really matters to its long-term business strategy and to decide that it should encourage suppliers and farmers to produce commodities sustainably without deforestation. Obviously, it makes business sense, but it's not a business decision that gives immediate, obvious, large rewards from investors. The language of ecosystem services and biodiversity has been very hard for companies, customers, and investors to understand, and we've certainly found it hard to integrate into financial analysis. Concepts like greenhouse gas emissions, health and safety are much easier to comprehend than biodiversity concepts, like diversity within species, between species, and of ecosystems. And I think the problem is that although these issues affect companies, the language still very much belongs to scientists and conservationists. Also, ecosystem services and biodiversity issues are often very specific to particular sites or operations. So even when companies or financial analysts do grasp the issues, it's very challenging to then relate this back to the overall business strategy, an investment case, and a financial research note. The other challenge that we've found is what an individual company can achieve depends a lot on what government action is going on. Take the example of forest protection in Indonesia. We found that companies operating there feel that it's very hard to get change there unless local governments take action to support good practice. In the case of palm oil, the Indonesian government's responsible for allocating the licenses to convert land with forest cover into agricultural plantation use. So if one single palm oil producer declines a license for land because it knows the government should really not be giving it out as the land has got some high carbon value because of peat bogs or forests there, it stands at a competitive disadvantage unless other companies follow exactly the same standards. So actually what's needed is better government maps of land with forest cover and controls of licenses to try and curb deforestation. So companies often feel very frustrated that they can't progress in ecosystem services and biodiversity because of weak government action. The other challenge that we've found is that proving results and implementing commitments is really hard for companies. So last week, F&C held a meeting for the financial services sector with UNEP-FI and Volans. And really, the key finding from that is that presently, many ecosystem services aren't valued in the market and considered sufficiently in investor decision-making unless there's something like a legal basis for external stakeholders to claim for damages, as in the case of BP, for example. And it's very difficult to value ecosystem services and biodiversity risks and opportunities accurately because of lack of consensus still on scientific, economic data, some regulatory uncertainty, and lack of consensus about what are key performance indicators for these issues. I think the difficulty in assigning probabilities is a real barrier to including ecosystem services and biodiversity in valuation. in time, our sector will have to revisit how these issues are considered in valuation. Next slide, please. So why exactly does the report that Pavan and Josh have been working on matter to investors? Well, S&C's view is that it provides a really compelling case for government action on the economics of nature and better company practices. So right now, if we look at the capital markets, they fail to capture the value of nature, and government policies have an essential role to play in protecting nature. The reason the report is compelling is because it specifically targets public policymakers and it focuses on the economic value of natural resources. There's some really compelling case studies in it, and they basically make the value of nature more visible, pointing out the economic benefits of protecting natural capital through regulation, reform of harmful subsidies, and financial incentives. At the same time, I think the authors have taken a very sensible position on regulation, and they warn government against taking simplistic rules and getting locked into outmoded technologies or production practices. In time, we expect to see governments introducing more effective public policies to protect ecosystem services and biodiversity, and we're already seeing this trend is happening across the world. Recently, a new intergovernmental panel on ecosystem services and biodiversity has been formed, and like the panel on climate change, we expect governments to use that as a useful body when making public policy decisions. If we take the case of forests, governments are really concerned about the persistence of illegal logging, particularly tropical rainforests, and we're already starting to see regulation of company practice. So the US banned commerce in illegally sourced timber and timber products through an amendment to the Lacey Act, and in the EU, legislation is just being passed to ban the import and sale of timber obtained through illegal logging. The international climate change negotiations have also raised significant funds to support national governments to achieve their deforestation goals. So, for example, in return for finance from the Norwegian government, the Indonesian government just announced a moratorium on deforestation. And during that period of the moratorium, the Indonesian government plans to map where exactly the land is with forest cover. Well, in time, we think that's going to affect where licenses are given to palm oil plantation companies that we invest in. So for us, the report really confirms that for certain companies, ecosystem services and biodiversity are going to become a driver of value. And I'd like to talk you through very briefly one or two case studies of where S&C has seen this in action already. Next slide, please. So I'm not going to cover all of these, but I would like to talk a little bit about SAB Miller and their approach to water management in Bogota. So all of you are probably familiar with SAB, one of the world's largest brewing companies. Ecosystem services like fresh water are an essential input for its products. So back in 2005, SAB acquired Bavaria in Colombia, and its aim there basically is to, you know, develop strong brands and raise profitability. They've got two breweries in Bogota, and the costs of water in that city are about 12% higher than anywhere else in Colombia, with 70% of the population facing water shortages. So SAB needs to make sure it's got access to water and control its water-related costs there. But one of the main problems is that the water basin is being affected by cattle breeders who need the grazing land for cows to produce milk. And deforestation linked to land that's been cleared for grazing means that sediments being washed into the river and local water supply. So basically, when the trees are cut down, rainwater washes away soil, building up sediment in rivers. So what's happened is that SAB's come together with government and some philanthropic foundations on the ground, and they've worked out that a new $60 million water fund could ultimately help save water companies about $4 million a year. But there's a 10-year payback period, so the government involvement's needed to encourage private sector involvement. But the fund includes investment in park rangers and grants for purchasing high-quality cattle for the cattle breeders. So SAB's invested about $145,000 to try and help the cattle breeders improve their production methods and reduce sedimentation. And basically, the project's going to help cattle breeders get more milk from fewer, better-quality cows, so there's less need to clear forested land. And over time, that should help improve water availability in Bogota and help the company to control water-related costs for its breweries there. So I think what that example really shows is that companies need to talk to governments and go beyond direct operations to resolve some of these challenges in ecosystem services. SAB had to talk to the local government and to the cattle breeders, going way beyond its direct operations to resolve the problem. Also, companies need to take a longer-term perspective when it comes to action on these issues. The payback period on the Bogota project is about 10 years. I'm not going to go into the other companies in detail, but suffice it to say that Heineken's another company that's made a lot of progress in working out where its water risks lie. They've made an inventory of their expected water availability levels by 2025, and they've identified which breweries will be operating in areas of extreme water scarcity. And in these specific locations, they're going to apply a water neutrality principle, whereby the company basically returns all water that they've used back to the ecosystem in a quality suitable for reuse. Rio Tinto, another company that's taken a lot of leadership in the area of biodiversity, basically because that will help them get better land access to land, and they're applying a net positive impact approach. So I think what these company examples show is that already issues related to ecosystem services and biodiversity are affecting companies, and they're starting to respond. Next slide, please. So how exactly is S&C going to use the findings of the report? Well, the first thing that we're going to do is recommend companies implement the seven actions for business. These are the seven actions that are recommended by the report's authors. And in a nutshell, we're going to ask companies to protect value related to nature, specifically to identify their dependence and impacts on ecosystem services and biodiversity, such as fresh water, and then manage related risks and opportunities. And if there's anything that you do after this call, I'd really recommend that you just have a quick look on the TEEB website at the executive summary and the case study boxes that are there, and also the seven recommendations for business. The other things that we're going to be doing as we go forwards is monitoring and assessing the impacts of public policy changes, particularly on forests and water, in company-specific analysis that we do, and communicate with our fund managers when we think value could be created or better protected. We'll also be doing work through collaborative initiatives, and this year we'll be endorsing a benchmark by the Natural Value Initiative of the extractive sector that will pick up on some of the issues raised by the BP incident. And we're also, like many of you, monitoring the development of exciting new environmental markets such as green bonds and forestry bonds. Next slide, please. But there are several initiatives that we'd welcome other investors supporting. Many of you already are, and they include the Natural Value Initiative I mentioned, the Forest Footprint Disclosure Project, and also the water initiatives that are out there already, focusing on better management of water and disclosure, CDP on water and UNCO water mandate. S&C's got several publications available on our website, and they're specifically focusing on ecosystem services and biodiversity, available to all investors that are interested in engaging on this issue or plan to do so. So without further ado, I'm going to turn back to our organisers.